Are we on?
Good morning. I'd like to bring to order the House Committee on Business and Labor and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1534. Jan, could you describe the bill for us, please?
I will, Committee Chair and members. This is the bill that allows certain school employees, and those are the employees who do not provide instructional, research, or principal administration duties, allows them to receive unemployment benefits without an interruption during school breaks and recesses if that individual voluntarily left work with good cause, and provides an escape clause. There's an emergency clause. There's no amendment. There's a minimal fiscal impact. There's no revenue impact. And it came across from the Senate on a vote of 23-5.
Thank you. So up first, we have Senator Dimbrough. You're a welcome face in this committee. So if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. Michael Dimbrough, Senator for District 23, that's Northeast, Southeast Portland. Pleased to be here to share with you this bill, which was a committee bill from my committee. And it's, how shall I put this? It's an important bill to deal with a dumb little problem. If I can put it that way. And the problem is that currently, if a school employee is on unemployment insurance, has been, is collecting unemployment, when they get to a vacation period, a break in the school year, usually it's the summer, although it can be, I think, during winter break, whatever we call it now, their benefits stop, and then they resume after the holiday period, because the way the law reads, they cannot collect unemployment during a school break. And the purpose of that was, it's really federal law that drives this. And it was originally put in place to prevent teachers from collecting unemployment during the summer. But it had this kind of spillover effect, which I think was, unintended, and everyone agrees is an unfortunate situation. So what this bill would do, and let me say that we passed a nearly identical bill on the Senate side last time, but when it came over here, we learned that it was going to create problems with the U.S. Department of Labor. And we have been trying to get some clarification from the Department of Labor about, is this really a problem if we do X, Y, and Z? And essentially they've told us that pass the bill and then we'll tell you. And so that's what we are doing. We put an escape clause in there, so if they rule that no, in fact, you cannot do this, then it won't go into effect. But it will, and that may take some time, actually, for them to make that determination. In the meantime, it will be in effect, and, we hope will remain in effect. So in a nutshell, is what this bill will do. We had a little work group, the employers, the administrators association did not have a problem with this. They'll be paying out the same amount of money, right? It just, the clock stops and then it resumes after the summer period is over. The employee still, of course, has to be looking for work. All of those requirements, continue. Therefore, in order to rectify this, I think really unfortunate and unnecessary hardship on the part of the unemployed worker, I urge you to vote for this. Be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, real quick, Senator. Thank you.
Tell me what kind of employee we're talking about. Give me some specifics.
Yes.
Is it a janitor? Is it a...
It's the janitor. Well,
yeah. Janitors work year-round, don't they?
This is somebody's been
leaving. Yeah. I mean, actually, it's not really... But, I mean, technically, it could apply to a janitor. It does not apply to certified teachers or managers.
Well, I understand that, but
yeah.
I mean, give me an example.
It'll be the instructional assistant, the aide, the instructional aide who, is not, who for whatever reason has been, either laid off or resigned with good cause.
Follow up. Do these people have the option? These employees have the option to do a 12-month on a salary, or are they paid hourly?
So I think that they are paid hourly. And remember, what we're talking about here is people who are laid off. I mean, they're collecting unemployment. This does not extend any benefits to any working district employees. It's only to those who are already collecting unemployment, and yet their payments stop during the summer for really no good reason. This is the only, as I understand it, the only industry where this applies to.
That's weird.
I just want to clarify that. So they actually get laid off during the school year, lose their job, and then they lose their benefits at this break period.
Yeah, really. The Employment Department, I think, can clarify this. Really, what we're talking to here is even a subset of that. It's people who have left employment. They've resigned, but for good cause. And so they're deemed, eligible to collect unemployment. So they have been approved, and the employer has not objected to their collecting unemployment. Everybody believes they should be collecting unemployment. They're following the rules of unemployment, in looking for work. But it's just because of this statutory anomaly, they cannot get their payments during a summer break. And it's creating, we're not talking about a lot of people, frankly, but for those people that are affected by it, they're really affected by it. They have to do without all income during that summer period or, the winter break or whatever.
So, Representative Evans.
So, just to, and again, I was not the first of the meetings of this task force, but I want to make sure I understood. So, for adjunct instructors at community colleges that are term by term, and again, that is a way that colleges and universities have found a way to not hire permanent staff, but to basically have part-time staff. It is not uncommon that you find out that the classes you thought you had aren't going to go. Would they be one of the groups that could be affected by this, that currently have a hard time getting unemployment because they didn't have a promise of a full contract?
Would it were so, Representative.
This one's, they're still out of this one.
Yeah. This will only, the statutory barriers to that seem insurmountable at this point.
Well, that's good enough.
So this just applies, to this small group of classified workers where there's more flexibility in the statutes for states to take their own route on handling this.
Okay. And as I recall, this is one of the bills that we did have a work group on, and then you took it from there and continued to work with the Employment Department to come up with this bill. Representative Doherty was next.
I'm going to hold my question for Employment Division.
Okay. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, mine might need to go to the Employment Department, too, but I was looking at the contract employees because I know a lot of the assistants and stuff, they'll go on year-round pay. So if they were let go, they would receive the pay that had been backed up. So are the benefits calculated off of what they take monthly over year-round, or are they calculated?
Now, these are really people, Representative, who are permanently laid off or out of work. Yeah. These are not people who are just taking a break. Off for the summer, whatever.
I was just, because the Christmas break and everything, their salary, they calculate it over when they go on to year-round pay. So they're going to get a larger portion once they're let go in that final check. because of the pay that was held back. So I'm just wondering.
This, yes, again.
How that's dealt Sharon with, Ripple, but the employment department.
Yeah, they can explain that. Yeah, we're just talking about their unemployment benefits.
Yeah.
Right, not severance or anything like that. Their unemployment benefits. They've been, you know, they've been collecting the benefits, and then suddenly those benefits stop for 3 months, and then they resume. The total payout doesn't change. You know, their eligibility for, you know, the length of their unemployment eligibility doesn't change. Nothing changes. It's just, you know, during that period, they have to do without unnecessarily.
My concern was the calculation.
Yes. Lori, would you want to come up? And maybe David could come up as well, and you can either stay or leave. I don't know what your time frame is.
I'll hang around in the back.
Okay.
If you need. I'll just sit.
There's one. Yeah, because somebody may want to throw a curveball at you.
Later.
As long as I'm not on the record. Under oath.
That
brings up interesting.
Lori, would you like to comment first, and then we'll turn it over to David?
Sure. Chair Holby and members of the committee, Lori Satsfield for the Oregon School Board. We were a part of this work group. Again, a small segment of are classified the way they're put in statute. They leave the district. They're not coming back to the district, and they're looking for work. Because of this classification, when a summer break happens, they lose their benefit, and they're already out looking for work. So we're good with this because it's a benefit that they should continue to get because they followed all the rules with the employment department. So we're good with this. I'd be happy to answer questions. It's a little confusing when you first hear it.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Widener.
My concern on this, Lori, was because when they're on a contract and they do year-round pay, is that benefit calculated on year-round pay, or are they getting what their main pay would be for the time that they're teaching? So now the benefit would be higher. So is their unemployment benefit at the higher rate, or is it at the year-round pay? And that makes a difference with them shutting it off during the summer or not. So because right now the way it's calculated, they're taking less home when they're on a year-round pay schedule versus if they just take their regular salary.
Chair Holby, I'd like to use my lifeline and ask Vice Chair.
Did she introduce
herself? Doherty.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to answer that question? Not from a standpoint, but with classified employees, they're considered hourly employees. Mm-hmm. And so they figure if you're going to work X amount of hours, you're going to make X amount of days. But some school districts keep them still on hourly, and so they get 9 paychecks. Okay? People that are going to be working, and we know that it's an instructional assistant for, you know, X amount of school, and you're going to work 1,000 hours. They may take 1,000 hours times $10, and that will be your yearly salary, and they'll split it up over 12. But with classified employees, the salaries are so low that when you take, you know, X amount of dollars and split it over 12 months to kind of settle what they've already maybe earned, actually their check might be a little smaller because, yeah.
Well, that's...
And so...
I need
so
a
what it is, it's just such a small amount. It's a very small amount of money.
Because I know a lot of classified employees that do the year-round.
It's up to the district whether they do that or not. Okay.
You only get one lifeline, so I suggest we defer to David here.
David, would you introduce yourself and maybe comment on this, and maybe it'll free up a little of the space we're having just questions about.
Thank you, Chair Holby. Members of the committee, I'm David Gerstenfeld with the Oregon Employment Department overseeing the unemployment insurance program. I was looking to see who I could use for a lifeline, but this is one of the most technical parts of the unemployment insurance program, so I'll try to answer it without sounding overly technical. The issue about the pay, there's really two possible ways that it could impact someone's unemployment insurance benefits. The easier to explain part that I'll take first is if an employee were to get their pay spread out over 12 months for the 9 months worth of work that they did, the money that they get over the summer break, for instance, when they're not working, that pay does not impact the benefit amount that they get. We don't consider that earnings during the summer break that would reduce their weekly benefit amount. So that's essentially, I don't know how often that happens, and I would defer to Vice Chair Doherty's knowledge on that. But if they did get the pay over the summer break, that's something that would not impact their weekly benefit amount. The other way that it could impact it, though, is when you first file a claim for benefits, we look at your earnings history to see how much you've earned, and then there's a formula that determines what your weekly benefit amount will be. So people that earn more tend to get higher weekly unemployment insurance benefits. And I would have to look to see, typically what we look at is when you receive the pay. So we take a snapshot of a year-long period, and we look at your total pay over the year. So if it's someone that worked for more than a year, it would average out over time, and it would be the same. If someone worked less than a year, I'd have to check on the technical answer, but it would likely be a relatively small impact to the benefits.
Thank you, David. That actually answers my question.
Representative Kinnemer.
Approximately how many people, you said a small group, but how many people are we talking about? What kind of numbers are we talking about?
Chair Holby, Representative Kinnemer, based on the information that we have, we think we're probably looking at about 50 people a year. And because, again, these are people that voluntarily left their job with an educational institution. It's only people that are not doing instructional research or high-level administrative work. So when we looked at that and looked at the history of claims, our estimate is about 50 a year. It's a little difficult to know because some of the people that would fall in that category may not, they may be traveling over the summer or not seeking benefits.
Follow up. And I see the fiscal impact is minimal. I guess it's minimal in terms of the unemployment rate that the schools would be paying. That have much of an impact there?
Most of the educational institutions are reimbursing employers. So rather than actually paying a payroll tax, they reimburse dollar for dollar the benefits that are paid out. Our estimate was that if it's about 50 people, that it would be about $108,000 a year spread across all the impacted employers. So ultimately, those employers would be reimbursing the $108,000 directly to the trust fund.
But, Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that, but remember, we're just shifting the payments, right? I mean, they still, may be eligible for payments after the summer, right?
And that is correct. The only wrinkle is that there could be some people that would not use up their entire claim. So that there might be some very modest impact where people who claim over someone gets a new job 3 weeks after the new school year starts, they might collect a few more weeks of benefits over the summer than they would if they stopped receiving the benefits over the summer.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
No. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are these people actually laid off at the end of the school year, or do they quit, or what is the criteria there as far as they're not coming back? And then do they are some of them hired back if they can't find another job?
Chair Holby, Representative Barreto, this bill only speaks to the people that have voluntarily left their job. The way that it plays out currently is if someone's actually laid off because the school year is ending, if it's reasonably anticipated that they could come back the next year, then they typically do not get benefits over the summer. If someone's laid off because maybe there's budget issues and they're actually reducing the workforce size, those people might be eligible for benefits. But this bill is only impacting the people who voluntarily leave their job during the school year and are not anticipated to come back to work for that employer.
Okay. Follow up?
Can I get a clarification on that?
So
does that explain a person who, like, moves out of area, they're not coming back, and that's what this is – that's usually what this scenario describes?
That's correct. There's a number of things that could be good cause, but that's the example that I usually use. Is someone – their spouse gets right. another job out of state, they move out of state
right.
so that okay. they quit their job with the school district.
All right. Go ahead, follow up.
Thank you.
Sorry.
How does that work in a regular situation where two spouses have two different jobs, one gets one somewhere else, and so they have to quit the, the place, because I was thinking that you qualified for unemployment if you got laid off, but if you actually quit the job, then you don't qualify. No. So even outside the school district, how does that work if someone quits?
And Chair Hovey, Representative Barreto, the general rule of thumb is that if you're laid off from your job, the employer has to show that there's a pretty good reason to do it in order for you to not get benefits. You have to have done something intentionally, usually.
Right.
If you quit your job, it's a pretty high burden to show that you're able to get benefits, but you have to show that you had good cause. One of the things that does constitute good cause is moving to preserve the family. So if my spouse gets a job out of state and is moving, and my option is either to leave my job or to break up that family, then that, under our administrative rules, is good cause and is something that you could collect benefits. And that applies whether it's a school employee or anyone else.
Go ahead. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The good senator mentioned, and I just want clarification on a shifting of payments. So is that essentially saying the benefits are front-loaded in this case rather than letting them keep being back-loaded, or what are we saying there?
Chair Holby, Representative Hurd, I think the... In most situations, what it means is that if I quit my job in May and I collect benefits for a month until that summer recess period starts, under current law, those benefits then stop over the summer break.
Mm-hmm.
When the next school year starts, I could resume getting my weekly benefits. So in most situations, this is just saying that they don't have that break. So it doesn't let people – right now, you can't collect more than 26 weeks of benefits. This doesn't change that. It just means that if I were to collect my full 26 weeks, I wouldn't stop getting them over the summer break.
Follow up. Thank you. Maybe I'm hearing it wrong, but I don't necessarily see that as a shift. I see that as a filling of a gap, an addition of 2 months.
It doesn't provide for any additional total weeks of benefits. So when I file my claim, I can collect up to 26 weeks of benefits.
Okay.
Right now, I might collect 4 weeks and then have to stop over the summer and then resume claiming the rest of my 26 weeks.
Okay.
This just lets me not have that break, but it doesn't extend the 26 weeks any.
Okay.
That makes sense. Yep. Okay.
Was there another question?
No.
So was there any opposition to this proposal?
No, none. When we narrowed it down to this for good cause, especially when he gives the example of the family and one leaving, it's like it needs to be fixed. And I we appreciate the opt-out clause with the Federal Department of Labor says we're not so happy with this that we can get out of it and not impact the whole state.
Yeah, and let me just add, this bill passed out of committee unanimously, and my vice chair carried it on the floor.
But you had 5 no votes on the floor.
Not everybody understands everything.
Well, this...
The vice chair did a great job of presenting it, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Representative Barreto, another question?
I did. I'm trying to... Oh, okay. So if... is there any caveat in here where, you know, I always hate to say this, but a lot of people aren't honest, and if they said, hey, look, we're leaving and... moving out, I'm going to quit my job, and then 3 months later they say, well, we move back, they get their unemployment, and they start right back over again with the school. They have some experience there. They have whatever. You know, the job didn't work out with their husband or with their wife, and so they moved back. I mean, is this kind of an opening a door, I guess, of opportunity to scam?
Chair Hovey, Representative Barreto, I don't think so. We have to deal with concerns like that about either people have plans and circumstances change or not everyone is completely forthcoming when we ask them about their circumstances. That exists with all of the claims that we look at now, and it's something that we deal with. I don't see this as presenting a significant greater opportunity for any of those issues.
Sappenfeld.
Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sappenfeld, can you explain your position? Who you represent? The school boards? Is that
Oregon School Boards Association, Mr. Chair?
Okay, so that's, forgive my ignorance, that's not the unions,
the board
that
members.
Is the management side
yes.
of things. So the folks
yes.
setting the budget, responsible for the budget, concerned for the budget.
Correct.
And you are in support of it.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got a question.
Representative Doherty.
This would be the question for the Department of Employment. We don't know for sure whether the feds have ruled on this. So let's say this happens and then the feds come back and say, you know, we can't do this. Will the person that has been affected, they have to pay their employment back, unemployment back?
Chair Holby, Vice Chair Doherty, no, they would not.
Okay.
What we would have to do is then have this law stop applying, and that savings clause in the statute would accomplish that automatically. Mm-hmm. But since we would be paying out the benefits in accordance with the law then in existence, mm-hmm. they would not be overpayments.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, recess.
So are there any more questions for this?
Thank you.
I have to take
first question.
Yeah. No more questions for, because I'm going to turn them loose, if that's fine.
turn them loose?
Be careful.
Well, you know, let them go on with their day. And oh. If there's no more questions for the department at this point, do you think? I'm hearing none, so thank you very much. I'm going to stand at ease.
Thank you.
I'm going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 1534 for the House Committee on Business and Labor. Was there anyone else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 1534? I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1534. And now I'm going to stand at ease again for a going to reconvene the House Committee on Business and Labor, and we've already closed the public hearing on Senate Bill 1534. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1534.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1534 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kinnemer moves Senate Bill 1534 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, it seems that all of the parties are in agreement about this. It seems like good public policy.
Thank you. Sometimes these public hearings work.
In fairness, I think from some of our initial impressions, the facts made a difference.
Ashley, could we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Beretta?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Fagan?
Excused.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Nose?
Excused.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Buckley?
Excused.
Vice Chair Kinnemer?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 1534, having received the votes, has passed. Representative Doherty, could you carry this one for us?
Sure.
Thank you.
Get too excited.
Pros don't get excited.
With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1534.
Cold-hearted.
And committee, Monday morning?
Yes.
9:30.
Canceled.
I'd like to be here at 8.
Let's go for 7.
You can show up whenever you want to.
We will go ahead and adjourn the House Committee.
You want to.
We will go ahead.